Life takes some interesting turns. If you had asked me in high school if I'd ever go to Czechoslovakia, I would have said, huh? If you asked me as a young man if I'd go to Czechoslovakia, I'd say, no way. And even 5 years ago, if you'd asked me if I would go to the Czech Republic, I'd say, no plans to do that. But Jane and I have been there. This past summer, we traveled to Europe, and while we were there, we went over to Prague one day. We were traveling on a Eurail pass, so the train was free. It took a better part of a day to get from central Germany over to Prague, and then about that to get back into Germany the next day, the day after perhaps. But we went there to see the church and visit with Mike and Tichana Mara. Mike went to Prague probably 20 years ago. I didn't ask him exactly how long it's been, but we've been supporting him about that long. He didn't go with intention of doing what he's done. But along the way, he found a lovely lady and who was a Czech citizen, and they married, and he now lives in Prague. As you know, Mike comes back here once or twice a year, usually during the summertime for a month or so, because he has family over in Franklin County. But he lives primarily in Prague now and works with the church there. So we went over to visit them and to express our appreciation for what they're doing and to see the situation that exists there. And this evening I want to give you a report on that visit. The first part of this will sound like a travel log, but it'll help you understand where they are and where they live. And then we'll talk about the church in Prague. Czechoslovakia existed from 1918 until 1993, and the two countries now were separated then. So it's been the Czech Republic since 1993, and it's there. And that dot is on Prague right now. The city of Prague itself, with the help of Google Maps, looked like this, a major river flowing through the city. The word Prague means ford, so it was built at a place where they get across the river easily. This is the central part of the city, and the points of interest would be the main square downtown in the old town, the general location of where the church building is up here, or the place where they worship. The cathedral building, which is here, and the approximate place where Mike and Tichana live, and it's down in this area right here, and the train station over here. So that's kind of the downtown area of Prague. I'll be a little bit mixed with my presentation this evening because of the timeline and because of the order of my pictures here, but this is a picture of the Charles River that flows, the Charles Bridge that flows across the river. This is the bridge right here. This bridge had been there since 1300s. Lots of things in Prague are old. The first major leader of the city was Charles IV. He built that bridge, laid the cornerstone himself. He built a university there, and then the cathedral that you see on the horizon in this picture. And there's a little bit closer picture of it. So that cathedral is about 1,000 years old. Prague is referred to frequently by people as one of the most beautiful cities in Europe. And it's one of the cities that was damaged very little, relatively speaking, during World War II. So it's basically the way it's been for hundreds of years, and these are some church buildings downtown on the main square. This is a statue of John Huss, Jan Hus or John Huss to English-speaking people. Huss was a theologian at Charles University, but he began speaking out against Catholicism in particular and in the footsteps of the work of John Wycliffe and laid the foundation for some other reformers to follow. This was not well received. He was ordered to go to the council at Constance. Constance is a city along the southern border of Germany now. He was taken to the council there. That process took several weeks. He was ill cared for. He was convicted of heresy and he was stripped, tied, and burned for his heresy. His ashes were thrown into the Rhine River. Now there's a statue of him in this town square in Prague. And of course, his work is well remembered now because of the effect it had on Christendom over the years. And this particular statue was erected in 1915, which was the 500th anniversary of his death following the Council of Constance. Across the square is this old town hall. And I show it to you for a couple of reasons. One is the architecture. Over on the left side of it, which you can't see from here, there's a giant astronomical clock, which is a tourist event every hour. So you see people gathering around each hour to watch the clock. And then on the front here of the pavement in front of the building, there are 27 crosses and a date, and the date is 1621. Those crosses are there to remember the deaths of 27 people who were thrown from that tower. And they were thrown down. They were Protestants. They were thrown down because of their opposition to the Catholic Church. And you remember that in the Middle Ages, sometimes there's a very thin line between religion and the state doing things. But they were condemned and thrown out of there, 27 people, and they're remembered by these crosses on the pavement there ahead in front of that tower. And this is an interesting building because it's a museum now, but it's real close to where the church meets there in Prague. Prague is also the home of some notable people. I'll mention two that mean something to me, Tycho Brahe and Johann Kepler. Kepler you probably heard of because he formulated in mathematical terms the motions of the planets, and he gets the credit for doing that. Tycho Brahe did a lot of the background work, but they lived there for a good while, and some other people, of course, who have been in Prague over the years. I mentioned this execution in 1621 to kind of put this in perspective for you. What else was going on in 1620s, early 1600s? Well, in England, King James was commissioning the translation of the scriptures into English for the first time. And across the ocean, people were landing in Plymouth on the Mayflower in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So that's kind of the events going on at that time, and with the turmoil in Central Europe and the religious uprising there and strife. A word now about the Czech Republic itself. There's 10 million people in the Czech Republic. They speak the Czech language with a number of other less minor dialects. It became a republic in 1993. 60% of the people, of the Czech people, are irreligious. They have no religion at all. They're either atheist or agnostics or totally indifferent to religion. 60%. 26% are basically Catholic, and many of those in name only. And that leaves about 15% a collection of other people. Many of them have no declaration whatsoever. They might be irreligious, but a few Protestants and a few other groups are there. But that's the environment that Mike has been working in all this time. The church meets in the north part, north of downtown, in a building on this street, a rented place on this street. That's a wayfaring stranger there on the street, you see. It's in this green tinted building with the front, and there's Mike and myself, Mike and I at the building. This is one of the men there preparing for the Lord's Supper. You can see the elements on the table and being prepared for that. His early remarks. This is a view of some other people who were there. They had about 30 people, I guess, in attendance while we were there. I should point out, say something about the decor in their meeting place here. They rent a child care, a daycare center. So all the things that are there for kids to play with are there. They keep it clean, and they request that you wear little booties on when you go in. They have little booties for you to put on your shoes to keep the floors clean because the kids play on the floors. But it's actually a very nice and adequate meeting place for them to be there, and it's fairly centrally located. The church is spread out around town, but they come into town in the center part of the town. There's good transportation, a good subway system to get them in there, and they come in on Sundays and worship there together. The area they have is probably 20 by 50 or so, with a little classroom, one or two classroom areas, and other facilities they need there. Interesting observation. Over in the corner, there's one of these ball pools, a big container full of little plastic balls that kids like to get in. Even big kids like to get in. Maybe old people like to get in. And you would think that this would be a problem. You bring little kids into the building here, and there's that all the other playthings, plus that in particular over there. They didn't notice it was there when they first came in. Didn't pay attention to it. After the service, it's time to play. And they got into the toys there and into the balls and so forth and played. The message is that even little kids can learn decorum. They can learn what you do and when you do it. So they knew when they went in that they weren't to be noisy or disturb anything, and they weren't to use those toys. After the services and during when people would visit and so forth, they got their fun in those toys. But anyway, that's why the decor is like it is. It's a daycare center, actually. This is a couple that I want to tell you about in particular. This is Robert and Tammy Hodanko and their children, Christina and Thomas. Robert is Czech. I think he lived in Slovakia some also. He is fluent in Czech, of course, and in English, and perhaps other languages. I suspect he knows German also. First of all, the Czech language is odd. It's one of the Slavic languages. Their alphabet isn't even the same as ours. Mike has learned very little Czech since he's been over there for 20 years and plans to learn no more because it's a difficult language. And so he depends on his wife, who's also very fluent in English and Czech, and other people to translate for him. Robert is very fluent, and he provides a translation. He sits in the back of the assembly, and when someone says something in English, he says it in Czech. And if someone says something in Czech, he says it in English through the whole service. So if someone's speaking, if speaking in Czech, you will hear it all in English. And if someone is praying, and they pray in English, you will hear that prayer and follow that prayer in Czech. They're fortunate to have him there because that's an unusual and difficult skill, especially between those two languages, to follow and to provide. But he does a wonderful job of that. The lady he met in New Jersey, I think, but she's from here. She's an American. Many of you are aware of the Andrews brothers and the Andrews families, gospel preachers years back. She is the granddaughter of one of those Andrews brothers. And I think she actually has a grandmother that lives over at Decatur now. But they met and married, and they now live in Prague. And they are very valuable members of the church there. And then, of course, this is Mike and Tatiana. Mike never dreamed he'd be where he is 20 years ago or 30 years ago. But he's doing good work over there. He has some health issues he's dealing with as he gets older. I guess most of us do. But they're doing a good work there. And Tatiana is a real blessing to him. And this is a group, I guess, of the old guys talking about things while ladies were visiting. Let me make some comments now about our work like this in foreign countries. You say, what's the goal? Well, the goal is to reach as many people as possible with the primitive Christianity. In a country like the Czech Republic, this is kind of their first exposure, many of them, to anything that we would refer to as religion. They've been irreligious. Some of the people that Mike works with are not former Catholics or Baptists or Seventh-day Adventists. They're atheists. So that's a different perspective for most of us in working with people. But the message, the goal is to get the message out there about primitive Christianity. And what I'm referring to, of course, is the Christianity revealed in the New Testament. And our personal goal would be to complement the work of the evangelists, help these guys do what they do, however we can. And the ultimate goal is to produce a self-sustaining church in a new place. After having been over there and seen these brethren, if you ask me what would happen if Mike came home, my answer is they'd just carry on. They wouldn't have Mike anymore, but they're strong people. And they're dedicated to the work there. They have to be. If he's not there, they'll carry on without him. It's a blessing that he's there because of his experience. But he's not indispensable. And that's the way you want it to be, everywhere, not just Alabama, but everywhere. So the goal is to produce self-sustaining churches wherever we can make that happen. And Mike is doing that there. The question might be, another observation we'll make is, if you think of the heritage that we have and the names you recognize from previous generations, I would think of J.B. McGarvey, for example, David Lipscomb, other men who have preached, Alexander Campbell perhaps, who preached in the 1800s in this country. And we look back at those men and see them as our heritage. What I think is happening and will happen is that 100 years from now, people in the Czech Republic will look back at Mike Morrow, because he's doing the same kind of work in the same kind of environment. They'll look back at in South Africa, they'll look back at Paul Williams and Gene Taupe. And other men have gone over there after the war in particular and have made it their life's work to preach the gospel to those people. They're there to do that work. And I think we need to help them as much as we can doing that work. What can we do? Develop an interest in missionary. I use the term missionary work, where people don't have access to churches like we have here. You may think that this happens in Europe, South America, Asia, but there's other places too. In Limestone County, there are about 50 plus churches among our brethren in brotherhood in Limestone County. So this is Alabama. Washington County, Alabama, has none. So if you want to go to Mission Field, you can go to Alabama. By happenstance, a couple of years ago, Jane and I went to Prince Edward Island, well known for vacation land and the Green Gables and so forth. A lovely place. One of the Canadian provinces even has that statue, a population of maybe 500,000 people. There is no church among our brethren on Prince Edward Island. And they have lifestyle and economy like we have, maybe better now. So a mission field may not be as far away as you think it is or where we sometimes think of it, but we need to help people with missionary efforts. We can pray for evangelists and their families. Send families notes of support and encouragement. In the back of our directory, there's a list of all the men that we support and their addresses and contact information. Send them an email. Send them a card that you sit down and with your hand write a note that says, I appreciate what you're doing, and send that to them, particularly those that get U.S. mail, but even the ones foreign too. Let them know you're thinking about them. Visit them if you're off in some foreign country and you got a rail pass to where one of them preaches. Go see him and see how he's doing. And, of course, provide funds for them. They're the men we support are adequately funded because we work with them and other churches work with them, but be concerned about their needs. And they are not at all insulted by surprise gift cards or something like that that might be useful to them. So those are some comments I think hope you'll find useful about the work, in particular about the work in Prague and the church over there, but also about the other men we're supporting other places and the disposition we ought to have toward them.